This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
I think with real estate, I don't think it's gender, is it? I think when it comes to zoning, it's race more than gender. Or do you think it's both?
Race and socioeconomic class and multi-generational sort of institutionalized racism. And then, like, what's even crazy is these folks, like, you know, you might have your black folk or your brown folk, as it is on the east side of Austin, have been forced over into these areas, which were the swampy or poor side of town. And then, you know, the hipsters, you know, and young white professionals decide, you know, a few bars are coming in over there in Bushwick or in Bed-Stuy. It's a cool area. Rent's still pretty cheap. So the folks that were pushed out originally are then pushed out again by property taxes and rents rising in those areas. The other thing I'll say, you know, about your comment about women and living longer than men, you know, for almost every category outside of, you know, white men, there aren't a lot of arguments that those categories, data or otherwise, or socially, that those categories should not grow in real estate, you know, in real estate, at least the space that I know. Right. So beyond just the data of a longer lifespan, you know, there aren't a lot of good data arguments to increase the numbers of white men in those spaces.
Yeah. And also on the VC side, technology is or the technology sector is criticized for the lack of women in leadership roles. Nowhere is this more true than real estate itself. It just seems to be that a lot of real estate is concentrated between a certain demographic. You could call it white male and older white men, and that's how the wealth is
older.
Like, how many real estate developers do you meet that are in their, 40s? That's like a kid, right? That's like somebody that dropped out of high school almost in the real estate development. I mean, they're almost all older white men. Now, I'll tell you what's been really cool. Most people listen to the podcast will be familiar with Clubhouse now. And, you know, when Clubhouse started, I wasn't there in the early days. I guess I joined this summer. And it was much more closed off. I had a feeling that it was, you know, it had a feeling that it was more, you know, much whiter and male, although I think there were some effort.
What they call the old boys club, right?
Boys club. But now there are real estate clubs that I go into on Clubhouse that'll be 80%, 90% people of color. And it's amazing. I've been floored. I mean, there have been more people of color in one of those Clubhouse rooms than in real estate than I met in my entirety of 4 years or so running Casita. So, you know, it really is a thing of knowing where to look and going to those places and creating space and networks and a pipeline for a more diverse set to come into real estate.
This is the greatest gift that the internet has offered. It allows anyone to connect wherever you are in the world and be part of a group and have aspirations and role models. I grew up in a pretty rough neighborhood and I didn't have any positive role models. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I discovered the internet at the age of, you know, 13, 14, and I realized I can create a different type of role model. Not the role models that you're exposed to when you're going to school, or, you know, for parents listen to this, you know, your kids going to school. The cool kids are not the kids that we would, encourage or, you know, approve of, right? You know, bullies and people who are, you know, doing drugs or whatever. So it was very important for me to have powerful role models looking at the internet, realizing I don't have to follow this path. And the path really was quite binary. It was go study and become a doctor or a dentist. Indian families do this, by the way, right? Or, you know, You look around for role models, and it's the cool kid in class. And the cool kid in class today isn't being invited to podcasts, shall we say?
Right, and you go to the reunion. It's always interesting to kind of see where folks end up. You weren't the cool kid in high school, Zane?
I'll let the viewers decide if anyone went to my high school. Didn't go to the best high school for sure. And speaking of that, it was very racially segmented. It was literally, there were parts of the play area, not play area, the park, whatever you want to call it, right, the field, where there'd be Irish people on one corner, there'd be Indians on another corner, Pakistanis in another, and you didn't, it was like how prisons probably are, right, where you're not supposed to go to the wrong part of the field. And if you zoom out a little bit, what you saw happening on that field actually is how the neighborhood was. There were all white neighborhoods, there were neighborhoods that were, you know, Indian, for any people who are listening from the UK, I grew up in an area close to Southold, which is a very Indian neighborhood, right? Or an Indian area. It's like the pubs there actually accept rupees. It's sort of a marketing novelty, but it's uh-huh. It's crazy. It's awesome. The best food ever too, by the way, Southall. Now, that's the UK, and you might not resonate with that, but do you feel, when you talk about populations and where they gather and you talked about zoning, I got a question for you. My parents fled East Africa in the time of Idi Amin. So my parents are from Uganda, Tanzania, originally Indian people who had settled in Africa, indentured laborers. They had to flee for their lives and leave Uganda, and they fled all over the world. They fled to Commonwealth countries like Australia, Canada, USA, and the UK. When it came to the UK, I've got an interesting anecdote here. People go where they know other people are because they want to build a community. On one occasion, there was a lot of NIMBYism going on, and a certain part of the UK, the population were outraged that there were people coming in who are immigrants. So they put flyers up and posters up everywhere, right? Saying, you know, these people are not welcome. And what actually happened was this poster got passed around and sent back to Africa. And people who couldn't read English literally saw, oh, look, here's a recommendation of where to go. And people went and flooded the area. They flooded the area and it backfired completely. But the point I'm getting to here, Jeff, is people like to go where there's a community, especially when you come to immigrants. There's always going to be areas that have a lot of Latin Americans and Africans and Indians and however you want to phrase it. What's your thoughts on that aspect?
Well, community buttresses change, right? Like if you're coming over from Tanzania, you don't speak English, right? I'm not saying your family, but let's just take a person that saw one of those posters that said, oh my God, this looks like a great cruise to go on. If they had a choice of sort of where to go, either consciously or steering themselves, so to speak, I think that's one thing. When that choice and awareness is not there, and someone else is making decisions. And this isn't just like back in the 20s in Austin and sending the black and brown folks east of what's now I-35. There's also a selective bias amongst like real estate agents, right? To where if you're black or you're Pakistani or you know, you're Hispanic, they won't select the homes or show the homes in, say, a white neighborhood, right? Like there's a selection bias there as well. So it's like, can you, finding your community and your people is great as long as you're the one doing the finding. and someone's not doing drawing the lines or doing the placing
for you.
So the very agents people come to rely on have this embedded unconscious bias, you could say, or conscious, you might even say.
Or conscious, right? So, you know, they may be saying to themselves, this person isn't going to be well accepted in this neighborhood, right, because they're black. And it's a white neighborhood, or making excuses such as this, or they may subconsciously just be selecting neighborhoods where they're not going to get in trouble as an agent, right? So, I mean, this is a well-known and documented phenomenon in the real estate world. And like, look, I mean, real estate is, you can beep it, but the most fucked up, sort of hardest to break into institution of racism, in my opinion. Look at where institutional wealth, or I'm sorry, multi-generational wealth is stored, right? The Rockefellers, the Kushners, right? I'm not going to say the Trumps because it's not working out so well there, maybe. But long-term wealth is transferred through the earth and through bricks, right? And so if you start doing some tracing back of institutionalized racism, and I guess one of the oldest and most formative, that being slavery. Well, as a slave, you're sure as hell not going to be transferring any institutional wealth in the form of real estate or property, right? And even in the modern day, right, I think that the average black family's net worth is at least 5x, you know, less than the average white family's, and it may be way higher than that. Well, you don't have the, you know, think about what it still takes to get into real estate. In California, let's say you find a really, really, really good deal, a cheap price on a house, and it's $1 million. Well, I don't have a couple of $100,000 to put down. And if you looked at the percentage of families that are immigrants or, you know, non-white folks, it's going to be a very low slice of people even able to buy a house. Right? Much less a multi-family apartment building. So there are innovations here. I'll let you follow up on that, but I'd love to talk about one of the greatest innovations that I've seen lately on this.
And just before you do that, if you look at the ownership rate of white Americans, this is non-Hispanics, white Americans, the ownership rate has been above 71%. And compare that to, let's say, black African Americans, at 41%. And, you know, there's stats all over the place, but the fact is there is a very clear difference in ownership rates between people of color and, you know, people of...
Massive disparities, right? And so if you don't have that advantage of even transferring a home multi-generationally, right, much less apartment and office buildings built into trust, these sort of things, getting the... in a very startup language-y way, the flywheel going.
Well, getting on the property ladder, right? You're stuck and you're trapped. And this is one of the biggest scams in the world. You know, if you don't have money, you can't make money, and you're going to forever rent. And if most of your disposable income is going to renting, well, how are you ever supposed to escape?
So it's a difficult problem to solve. And, you know, I think one of the more innovative things that I've seen lately is from a co-living space in San Francisco, there's a company called Star City.
Yeah.
They're one of a collection of, say, four or so globally big players in this space. And, you might be familiar with the crowdfunding campaign Republic. A lot of folks are. You know them well, I would guess.
John at Star City too. We should probably bring him on the show at some point.
Yeah. So essentially, right? It's a Kickstarter that's very respectable, but for equity in companies, usually. So what John Deshotsky and Star City, they're actually running this now. It's a bit of a plug, but it's a very interesting idea. Instead of selling equity in Star City in very small chunks, right? So you didn't have to be a high net worth individual. It's the idea at Republic, right? You don't have to be a high net worth individual, right, to be a qualified investor, to be an angel investor in startups. You can throw $500, $1,000, $2,000 here. So what he did was say, don't invest in Star City equity as a company. We're going to build a multifamily complex that's going to be a ground up like $22, $25 million deal. And you don't need to be a Kushner to invest in this because usually you need a minimum of $500,000 or a couple of million dollars to get into one of these deals. For $5,000, you can invest in this real estate project and get what's known as like mailbox money eventually, right? Get a good return and get paid back on that. So that was really interesting. I think it's the first time that Republic's done that. And I'm really interested in doing that in the real estate world. Kibo, K-I-B-B-O, a van community, I think has an active Republic right now where you can put $500 in. I put some money into that one because I believe that's part of the way that we're going to live in the future. It's trending.
Do you feel the fractionalization of a real estate, reducing the minimums? There's a lot of startups trying to build like a Robin Hood for real estate. But today you can go to crowdfunding platforms and you can have ownership in real estate projects for very low minimums. Do you think that's going to be enough to change things? When it comes to home ownership, not necessarily your own home ownership, but having more people of color owning more of the world's real estate.
Yeah, it's you know, that's one way. It's going to move the needle a little bit, right? Being able to fractionalize, you know, ownership. But again, if we're talking about that multi-generational flywheel going, right, you've got to get something, an asset you can transfer to your heirs, right? Holy. And these fractional ownership, it isn't probably going to do it. Now, what I love about Clubhouse and those rooms on real estate, it is the scrappiest, like scrappiest kind of shit I've seen from a real estate perspective on just various techniques of getting in the game without a lot of capital. And, you know, you're not doing it the traditional way of going out and putting $500,000 into a multifamily project. And I would encourage folks, I've got probably 20 invitations to Clubhouse. So anybody watching the podcast that wants an invite, I will burn out all of them on folks. Just email me, j@jupe.com. The letter J at jupe.com.
j@jupe.com.
Right. If you're interested in getting in on the real estate deal and don't have an invite from Clubhouse, I think I've got 20, and I'll hand those out to folks that are, you know, aren't in the real estate game but want to get in.